When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Well, you can laugh. I was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist. But having said that, I want to be like me.
There should be some good, happy vibes around the Second Captain's Football podcast today because we have got Ken back from holidays. Hi, Ken.
Owen, how are you?
I'm all right. And Murph back from cheering on his beloved St. Pat's to victory in the cup final at Lansdowne Road. Congrats, Kieran.
Thanks, Owen. It's just, you know, it's what a day. Did I ever think that this day would come, you know?
It's been a lifelong obsession growing up in Milltown. Yeah.
It was one for the lifers, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of fair weather fans. And we welcome them, of course. You know, the more the merrier. 37,000 people in the Aviva last night. Where were they during the season? Owen, I'd be inclined to ask. today's not the day for that sort of chat. You know, what a day, though. I mean, I was just thinking about it, Owen. You know, like, this time last Sunday, I was, you know, pretty down at heart about losing my own county final. And then sport just repays me in spades with what I saw in the Aviva yesterday. Just, wow. What a roller coaster.
Kenny, I glossed over you being back. I mean, did you enjoy your break? The unfortunate timing of it notwithstanding?
What, unfortunate?
Yeah, just another big story breaking while you were gone.
What story?
Solskjaer gone, Ragnick in.
Well,
Manchester United.
Is Rangnick definitely in yet? What's going on there?
Well, Lokomotiv have eventually said, yeah, all right, go on, see you later. So, I don't know what remains. He supposedly has talked himself into this consultancy role for 2 years. So,
it's an interesting one. I mean, what's the point of the consultancy? I mean, the story that you'd say, it wasn't really a story, was it? I mean, it was like, we all knew that this was happening. It was just a culmination of what we've been talking about for, like, interminably.
you sound exactly like the emailers who were getting onto myself and Murph's case last week for giving it way too much coverage.
The thing was talked to death. I mean, it had become one of the weirdest.
Can it do away with the obituary part of the newspaper? Listen, we're all going to die anyway. So why is it even news?
I just mean
so someone
that
dies.
Been...
Of course he's going to die, whether it was today or whether it was 53 years from now. Who cares?
Well,
he's dying anyway, so come on.
The obituaries had been written in advance, had been published. The obituaries usually are written in advance, but in this occasion, they'd been published in advance for weeks and months and actually years. In fact, the first obituaries were printed moments after Ole Gunnar Solskjaer took the job. You know, like after he signed the permanent contract. It was like, oh, what have you done? And since then, and I suppose that does then create a sort of a, rather than it being, you know, an analytical environment of ongoing sort of feedback and, you know, updated judgments and all that, it actually becomes a bunch of grim-faced gamblers sitting around the roulette table, you know, waiting for the bets that they've already placed to be proved either right or well, I mean, right in this event. You know, that's just sort of the way it is now. That's I'm afraid, what the atmosphere of transparency and accountability created by social media has done to us. You know, it's just all... Even Keane, did you see Keane yesterday? Like, a couple of times.
Keane and Carragher.
A couple of times he referred to stuff like, well, the players have done as I predicted and got the and thrown Ole under the bus, you know, referring back to his own sort of, you know, it's like I was right about that. And then he referred another point to, well, Jamie's going to look very foolish, you know, if Man United win the league, Jamie's going to look very stupid. You know what I mean? It was all this kind of, you know, that's really what it's about. But the point is that the people who said that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was a good manager for Manchester United were wrong. And I mean, this isn't really the point. But we had sort of said, look, this is not going anywhere. There are obvious problems, and eventually it became so bad that the Man United board, who plainly didn't have an idea of what else to do, were forced to act. They just couldn't, you know. When you lose 4-1 to Watford, you know, you lose. I would have said when you lose 5-0 at home to Liverpool, that's, you know, there's no coming back from that. I mean, we did say that. There was no coming back from that. But they let it drag on. Whether they wanted to get the City game out of the way, I don't know. I think they were probably just at that point trying to figure out what they were going to do. But every result just made it worse. And the Watford thing, it was impossible to continue. It was like, okay, just we'll get Carrick. I didn't realise how much Keane disliked Carrick until yesterday. Oh, he really absolutely destroyed Carrick. I know that his argument with Jamie Carragher has got a lot of attention because of the, you know, the way that it went. I mean, it was an extremely comical thing to watch. But what he said about Carrick actually did have some, you know, it was like a cold-blooded assassination.
Even more cold-blooded than Scholes's.
Well, I didn't see Scholes. I had to watch all this stuff back. I had to watch all this stuff back last night. I wasn't like, you know, I mean, I couldn't watch the whole thing. I was at a real football occasion.
Exactly. So, and, you know, before we get sidetracked again into Manchester United talk, which we already have done, I do want to mention yesterday, the last few minutes of injury time, the FA Cup final, Robbie Benson, already sporting a head bandage from an early collision, controls the ball, falls over, just about manages to swing a leg at it from his prone position, get it to a teammate, before turning over in agony onto his back and calling for another teammate to release the cramps that were taking hold of his legs at that stage. Didn't look as though, this is about 4 minutes ago in injury time, didn't look like this was the man who was going to be the cup-winning hero a few minutes later, but he apparently managed to shake off just enough lactic acid to allow himself to step up, slot the winning penalty, resulting in absolute pandemonium among you and your lot, Murph. And you were there as well, Ken. What were your guys' impressions of it? There was a big build-up to this. There was a record. You were part of a record crowd of just over 37,000.
Yeah, I mean, is this the biggest thing now? Is this bigger? Is the FA Cup bigger than the league now? I mean,
well, the final has always been a good occasion, but it's never, you know, it's always, it's a cup final. But yeah, 37,000 is a hell of an amount of people to turn up to watch a domestic football game when you take average league crowds, for example.
Yeah, I mean, just in terms of the profile of the occasion, there's nothing obviously really like it at the moment in Irish domestic football. It was a sensational thing to be at. I mean, the thing that was letting it down first was the game. The game, you know, the game was pretty bad. There wasn't really a lot going on, but you know, smoke in the air, like the floodlights dance through the smoke. You know what I mean? You know.
Well, it was Murph has flair with him, I presume.
No. I stopped short of flare lighting. I mean, everything else, absolutely no problem. But the flare lighting, no, I stopped short. This is my delicate hands.
You enjoyed it, though?
Oh, Ken has described it very well there. I mean, as an occasion, it was so much fun to be at. So much colour, so much. I mean, both sets of fans were brilliant. I mean, I thought that the Pats fans did actually outsing the Bows fans quite comprehensively.
Well, it seemed that way to me because I was in the Bows end, but I was in the premium section.
Yeah,
I mean,
you wouldn't catch me there, Owen.
No,
not for me. No.
Wait, where were you?
I was in block 105,
lower tier.
I was making a lot of noise as well, as you can imagine. Lower tier.
Yeah. See, by the time I bought my ticket, the lower tier was all gone. So I was like, "Will I go upper tier? Nah, premium all the way." Because you see, I don't get to go to these matches as a fan. You know what I mean? Like the matches at UEFA usually. So I was like, well, you know, it'd be kind of interesting to see what it's like in there. And as it was, actually, I went to get a pint at halftime, And I don't think people should drink at football matches because it ruins the match, because it just makes you want to go to the Jacks. Mm. You're just like, why have I done this to myself? This is stupid. But also, I went immediately on the stroke of halftime. I returned to my seat at the 60-minute mark. So I can't tell you what happened between minutes 45 to 60 of the game. I know that there was a couple of oohs and ahs from the crowd that I could see. I mean, it was at that point where, you know, you're just like, well, I mean, I've wasted so much time in this queue now. I have to see it through to the end. I can't go back empty-handed now. You know what I mean? So that to me didn't feel premium.
It's not a premium experience.
That was not premium. But, you know, it was my own fault, I suppose, for maybe not bringing my own drink to the game.
Not allowed, I don't think, Ken, but I mean, I suppose.
I checked my bag, so, you know, I mean, maybe that was where I went. Maybe more seasoned premium matchgoers are aware that you bring a bag of booze to the game.
Yeah, I drink.
Maybe that's how it works. That's how people make it work. I don't know. But that aside, it was an immensely enjoyable experience, which I look forward to talking about in even more detail with David Snaid and Kevin Brannigan.
Indeed, Ken. Nice tea up there. It is the Snaid and Brano show today. Kevin Brannigan, of course, Bose fan, journalist and filmmaker. And David Snaid, who wrote an absolute beaut of a build-up piece for the 42 during the week. He met up with the Bose captain, Keith Buckley, and St. Pat's, well, what turned out to be St. Pat's goal scorer, Chris Forrester, scored a wonder goal. Actually missed one of the penalties, but it didn't matter in the end. The two lads took him on a tour of where they both grew up on either side of the Liffey. And you just end up getting a real feel for who they are, where they came from. Not to mention some of the other characters who randomly pop up, like Buckley's uncle Mick and his dad at one stage. A lad called Evan, a referee. There's just loads of amazing stuff going on. We highly recommend reading that one. Even after the event, I'm sure you will enjoy it. Got a huge week coming up in the World Service. Premier League matches right through the week. Our members will hear all that coverage. One of the highlights of the year, Murph, Second Captain's Christmas Sports Book Show with Sinead O'Carroll and Malachy Clerkin. I know that's one of your favourites.
Oh, yes indeed, Owen.
And
yes, indeed.
Do you think a little bit of spinal fusion surgery is going to stop Richie Sadler returning with the player's chair, which he recorded? Well, yes, it will stop him. So he's recorded it before before going under the knife. He recorded a brilliant interview with Keith Earls. There's also some pretty hardcore commitment from Sinead O'Carroll, we should mention, to the sports book slot. You'll hear all about that later on in the week. Secondcaptains.com is the place to join. €5 a month plus a little bit of VAT, depending where in the world you're living. Ken, please report on sport.
Well, you mentioned there of Richie having recorded his thing, so it may be going out even as the knife slices into his spine.
I mean, this is true. This
I don't know.
Can we stop mentioning the word knife? I mean, I'm sure it's a very benign procedure where his spine is opened up, and twiddled with, and screws
welded together.
I mean, it could be. I mean, it's actually quite a beautiful take. So there's no need for us to further dramatize the extreme trauma which Richie's body will soon undergo.
It reminds me of the irate tweet that was posted by Mike Parry. You know Mike Parry, who I think he's probably most famous for. I think he's some kind of radio personality in the UK, but he's most famous for like the Cinnamon Challenge clip that he does. You know, he's this guy with a sort of a goatee beard, and you know the Cinnamon Challenge that was like a viral thing that people used to do a few years
no,
ago.
No, actually, Owen. Ken, I'm not familiar. No.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm. I am serious.
I'm serious.
I've never been more serious, Ken.
Really? Okay, well, I mean, you know cinnamon, the spice.
Yeah, listen.
Well, have you ever eaten a heaped teaspoon of cinnamon?
No.
Well, do you have cinnamon in your kitchen? Because this could be good, actually. This could work in audio.
No, I don't have any. You know what? There's some cinnamon sugar that I often put on my morning bagel, but that has actually run out.
It has to be pure cinnamon. Look, okay, yeah. maybe it is for the best.
Such a shame.
So what you do? What's involved in cinnamon challenge? I mean, I can't believe that I'm having to explain this. I thought everybody knew this, but you put in a spoonful. You eat essentially a heaped teaspoon of cinnamon, and what ensues is hilarity. When I say eat, what I mean is you put it in your mouth, because it turns out that cinnamon is of a particular texture that just is intensely irritating to, I guess, your the mucosa or whatever the lining is of your mouth and throat. It's just very fine and sort of coats the lining in a way which is intensely irritating, such that what happens is like reflexive coughing and spluttering, resulting in, you know, volcanic plumes of cinnamon, you know, shooting from your mouth to cinnamon everywhere, mixing with your tears, coating every surface. It's a real mess, is what I'm saying, and it's what Mike Parry is most famous for this.
What a legacy to have. Well, it's like never be able to take that away from him,
because he adopts it with a particularly kind of heroic skepticism about, like, well, obviously, you know, there's a lot of soft individuals out there.
Yep.
But you know, he does it with a sort of a brash confidence, which is very quickly undercut by the disastrous scenes.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah. Okay, Mike Parry. But what do you got for his son, Mike Parry, Ken?
He just tweeted, this is just in relation to Richie, who obviously is playing with the Time Lord, Sadler, is playing with time, even as he is, you know, obviously undergoing this bone welding. He could be talking to Keith Earls at the same time.
Yeah.
Because he's... Mike Parry says, "Have I accidentally been eating magic mushrooms?" This is November 28th, so yesterday, 3:10 p.m. "Or is this really at Everton centre forward at Calvert-Lewin 14 advertising a shaver on TV at halftime of the live coverage of our game as Everton are losing 1-0? He's too injured to play, but fit enough to be in an advert. I despair." I despair. And then he uses the emoji where, with the narrowed eyes and the sort of flat mouth. Almost looks as though. Just in this microsecond before a cinnamon explosion plumes forth, you know, you've been trying to hold it in, but you finally, your reflexes have just taken over. And so that's, I mean, I feel as though, I think Mike Parry's a radio guy. There must have been some pre-records involved, but you know, it turns out you can actually record stuff. Not everything goes out live like a 1950s soap opera, you know. So Calvert-Lewin actually wasn't literally doing this. But yes, it was him. It was Calvert-Lewin who was obviously.
"Do my eyes deceive me?
No, mine eyes. Am I on magic mushrooms? No, it's a pre-recorded advert.
You do have to spare a thought for the Everton fans. So they've got a Merseyside derby this week, and they're not exactly going into it all guns blazing. So emotions are heightened around Goodison.
Well, it's not looking good, Alan. It's not looking good. And you know, Richard Keys has already done his victory lap. Agent Rafa is his blog today. He's talking about Rafael Benitez. Of course, no one is really suggesting that Benitez is running Everton into the ground on purpose. But this is the blog I knew I'd be writing sooner or later. And it certainly isn't a self-congratulatory, "I told you so." Benitez should never have been given the Everton job. Everton, he's writing Everton, H'.
That's the way, is that the way Rafa says it?
I guess apparently it is. I mean, does he say Everton? Benitez got a small army of friends in the press, the odd former player who's managed to con for years, etc., etc. Okay, you know, Benitez are on a bad, Everton are on a bad run. A couple of injuries, not least to Calvert-Lewin, have hit them hard, I think. And then the Merseyside derby is obviously very badly timed, or maybe well timed. I mean, a heroic showing in that could turn it around. But to be honest, I don't know if you've seen the video of the Everton fans. This is after they lost to Brentford, and they lost with a penalty, and they had a penalty not given to them, which maybe could have changed things. But the fans in the Everton fans, as the Everton players came over at the end of the game to, you know, applaud their supporters and thank them for the support, "Hey Jude," which is Brentford's end of match music, is playing that wonderful Beatles. I don't know if you've been watching the Beatles thing.
I've seen the buzz, all right. Haven't seen it yet.
Not yet, Ken, but maybe later. Maybe later today. Today could be the day.
Yeah, I was watching a bit of it on Saturday, and I was a bit tired, and I mean, I was really tired, and I thought, this is so boring. I can't. What is this all about? But I've actually watched a couple of clips since then, and I think I'm going to go back and have to go back and watch a bit more. I'm sorry, but the clips have just got me interested. Have you seen the clip of Paul McCartney, like writing
"Get Back" out of nowhere? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's pretty
amazing. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was like, listen, okay, well, that's Ken, good.
I think even by the standard of Ken Early Tangents, this show so far has just been... it's been people an been unbelievable
a, tangent. People have been waiting a week to get Ken's football thoughts, and here we are talking about
Get Jude, Back by the Beatles. Hey Jude is playing, you know, it's like, don't make it bad, you know, take... don't feel so bad about things, Jude. It's gonna be all right.
Yeah.
And as this is blaring out, all you can see is all these silhouetted hands making the two-fingered salute to the Everton players, and you can hear faintly the screams of "boo, boo," and you know, "you fucking swat," and so on and so forth. So it's all cooking up nicely ahead of this week's Merseyside derby. The Liverpool, meanwhile, I mean, obviously Liverpool had a part to play in the FAI Cup final as well.
Go on.
Because Vítězslav Jaroš, the Pats goalkeeper,
is
another one of these like goalkeepers that Liverpool just have. Liverpool can't find a room in the club for all the great goalkeepers they've got. And I mean, Jaroš was, I don't know who was the man of the match in the game. I'm not sure because I was at the game. But Jaroš struck me as like as good a contender as anyone because he made some amazing saves when it looked like Bozo were going to win it late. And then in the penalty shootout was swaggering around, arrogantly drinking from his water bottle and ignoring the Bozo penalty taker who was forced to wait. He was forced to wait for him then to assume the position and then blast the ball, knock the ball wide or
it
over.
It was Lee Desmond, by the way, for Pats, who got man of the match.
Lee Desmond. Well done to Lee Desmond. But I'm going to let you finish. But for me, Jaroš had the best FAI Cup final. But look, Liverpool currently have Alisson Becker. And they won 4-0 on the weekend. And Alisson Becker had to be at his best to ensure the points went to Merseyside. Because the points stayed on Merseyside. The match was on Merseyside. It's kind of rare that you would see a game that finishes 4-0 to one side, and yet the goalkeeper for the nil side, or the side that won 4-0, has made so many amazing saves, or has had to be there in so many big moments for his team. So you know, it's like Liverpool are scoring so many goals, but also letting in quite, or not letting in a lot, but looking as though they could let in a lot,
letting in a lot of XG.
Well, I don't know exactly. I should check their XG to see if that's really true. Do you want me to do that now?
Go for it, Ken. Go for it.
He really has been going on a lot of tangents today, though, hasn't he?
Well, look, I'm just trying to keep the conversation away from the inevitable destination that people have been complaining about.
Already hit early on.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Ken. Fair play. No, we'll talk among ourselves while you're finding this XG.
No, the XG yesterday was only one, but you know, 1.2 the previous game against Porto. I mean, they won that game, but they lost the XG. You know what I mean? So there's a couple of little signs there, but when Alisson is playing well, I mean, that's why you have goalkeeper, isn't it? But I do think that the team, I mean, they're scoring tons of goals. I mean, this is the highest scoring they've been under Jurgen Klopp, I mean, in terms of their goal scoring form, but it's usually, you usually don't win the league when you let in two goals a lot of the time. And they've done that against West Ham, 3 goals, Brighton, Atletico, Man City, Brentford, 3 goals, and Milan. You know what I mean? That's not a good sign. Anyway, so that is a big one to look forward to this midweek. Obviously, there's a bunch of... Oh, and I think I saw you mention on a couple of occasions that you have got some matches coming up.
Where can you see the Mersey?
Are you on every night? Are you working every night this week?
Yeah.
Oh, unbelievable. What a dynamo.
You see, how many times were you forced to mention that the Merseyside Derby was on Premier Sports 1?
It was on a number of occasions. But you got to remember, if not everyone's as committed as you and Ken are to the cause, you mightn't necessarily be watching the whole game. People might just be tuning in post-match or just... Mm. I don't know why specifically you would tune in post-match. You know, but you might just happen upon the coverage at some stage. So you got to keep the mentions going. So yeah, all 10 games live.
Are you doing Newcastle-Norwich? Or is that Norwich-Newcastle? Yeah. Interesting, isn't it?
Well, you see,
Does everyone want Newcastle to get relegated?
Yeah. Most people, I would say, yeah.
It's interesting. I can't really remember that situation before.
It would be funny just to see the whole thing. I mean, it would maybe only be a bit of a delay. But the problem is, if they get relegated, how do they then attract the players that are going to...
With money.
Ultimately into the Champions League. Yeah, with money, I suppose. That's a pretty obvious answer.
They simply offer money to the players, and the players go, yes, that sounds...
Yes, that is
amazing.
How it works.
Owen, I'm sorry, excuse me, I have to stop the recording right now at this juncture to announce officially that Manchester United, their official Twitter account, has officially welcomed Ralf Rangnick to Manchester United Football Club.
Wow.
Well, you just... Sorry, I know I might have interrupted your flow there, Ken, but I thought it extremely important that we bring that news to the people.
Well, look, I suppose at some point we were going to end up having to talk about what was the big English game yesterday. Obviously, Kieran, both yourself and myself didn't see this one live because we were watching an actual game.
Yeah, real football. Yeah,
yeah. But I did watch it later on. To be honest, I fast-forwarded a bit over the first half because all I saw was people going, my God, this first half is an absolute dog of a game. I can't bear it. I can't bear it. I can't bear what these teams are doing to us. And so, but I did watch the second half, which was interesting. And some of the reaction, as we've already mentioned. Actually, the reaction, to be fair. Like, I mean, I saw a bit of it on Match of the Day as well. And I thought the discussion was just so ridiculous. Like... You know, they're talking about like how can they be so much more organized? You know, since Rangnick has come in, and there was this whole idea that Rangnick is now controlling the team from afar, which Gary Neville had suggested because the team had, you know, looked different to what they'd done in the previous match.
Ronaldo had been dropped, and they were pressing more, running more. Basically, that was
pressing more. Where did this idea that they're pressing more come from? Like where were people getting that? Like, it was such nonsense. How can they be so much better organized? They were asking BBC. Two words, Timo Werner. Right, Timo Werner missed chances. Rudiger's miss at the end. Unbelievable. Chelsea had the chances to win the game three times over. It was United's third worst XG against performance of the season, behind the Liverpool game and the Leicester game. Right, so, you know, they've played like 19, that's in the league and Champions League, 19 games, and this was the third worst. There wasn't really any sign of great organization. What happened was that Jorginho lost the ball in the floodlight and miscontrolled it, and Sancho was really quick and onto him. You know, Sancho, a player who maybe wouldn't have been playing, or you know, it's funny that he scored two goals in the two matches since Solskjaer has left.
As Rashford charges along offside all the while in front of him.
Was he offside?
He was definitely off. He definitely ran ahead of him. I'm like, Rashford, calm down. This is, you're kind of ruining the...
It's okay to be ahead of Sancho, though, as long as he's behind the ball.
No, right? Ahead of the ball. I mean, the ball was glued to Sancho's foot.
Yeah.
And I thought he was. So, and it didn't really matter because Sancho did the little shimmy. So even if it was effectively turned into a one-on-one, he still finished it pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great finish, actually. I had to watch it loads of times. What exactly has he done there? You know, he does this little sort of
twisty motion.
I don't even know how to describe it. It was like it's like he started doing a step over and turned it into a little wobbly legs and sort of, I don't know. It was a nice little move. But look, United were wiped again. And this is part of what Keane pointed out after Carrick's interview. With through narrowed eyes, he just. Like shot down everything Carrick had said. You know, of course it was a penalty. We've all seen it. Or you know, Carrick had complained. People go on about that. There's a lot made of the pressing. We've all seen the stats. They're bottom of the league. But people, for some reason, were saying, "Oh, Ralf Rangnick. You know, his influence is already there." And well, I mean, this was even put to Thomas Tuchel, who played for Ralf. I knew Ralf Rangnick. I played for Ralf Rangnick. Ralf Rangnick was a friend of mine. And this was put to him on Sky afterwards. What was the clip? Let's play the clip.
Did you feel at any point this afternoon like you were facing a Ralf Rangnick team? Like, I know he wasn't in the dugout, but did you look at certain things and think, this is Rangnick?
No, not at all.
But fine, no.
And I just wish there was a way also of making you see the smile, the smirk on Thomas Tuchel's face as he says that. It's just like, no, nothing.
Nah, they were no good.
But you know, it just reminds me, it's like that, it's like in Hamlet, you know, there's a bit when Hamlet is winding up Polonius, who is like who's like this pompous old pundit figure. And it's like, you know, and he says, "Do you see yonder cloud that's almost in shape of a camel? By the mass, and 'tis like a camel indeed. Methinks it is like a weasel. It is backed like a weasel. Or like a whale. Very like a whale." You know, so I mean, this guy will say literally anything that's suggested to him. Like, you know, he can, whatever, you know, Hamlet suggests, he'll be like, oh yeah, I think so. Yeah. Since it's Rangnick, like, the guy hasn't taken a training session, and supposedly, like, already by some telepathy, the players have begun to internalize his, like, nonsense. Anyway, they didn't even do the thing they were supposedly doing. I mean, he just picked a team. Like, he dropped Ronaldo because, quite rationally, and I don't think you have to be, like, you know, the reinventor of, I don't think you have to have reinvented German football, you know, 20 years ago to see that Ronaldo was a bit of a luxury player. And if you're playing against a team like Chelsea, if you're playing away to a team like Chelsea, who are, you know, a top team, that maybe you can't afford to carry a player who's not going to run. I mean, we've seen Ronaldo in these games. You know, we've seen him against Liverpool. We've seen him against Man City. He doesn't get a kick. He did get one kick against Man City, I can remember. The ball, a chance came to him from the left and he hit it, and, you know, it was too close to the goalkeeper. And I can't remember. He also kicked Curtis Jones, right? They're the two kicks I can remember from Ronaldo's games against Liverpool and Man City. And otherwise, he's just you're playing a man down. Yeah. So Carrick just decided, okay, maybe this isn't the game for that. I'll go with some more mobile forwards. And in the event, that's where the goal came from. But it wasn't as though this was a big change of approach. I mean, that hasn't happened yet. I mean, you know, Klopp, I saw saying about Rangnick, you know, unfortunate, bad news for other teams because they'll be organized on the pitch now, which seemed a bit a bit harsh on, harsh but fair. But he said he'll find very quickly he doesn't have any time to train them because they just play all the time. So there isn't actually any time to really do any coaching here. So it'll be interesting to see how he handles that. So I don't know what, I mean, Tuchel's response in this situation was to focus on sorting out the defense. Well, I mean, the situation when he came in.
Yeah, and this is the point. It's been made a bit over the last few days that Tuchel shows you actually can do it. You actually can make quite a difference in quite a short space of time.
Yes. Well, you can. I mean, you need to have good players, and maybe Tuchel's players were better, and maybe Tuchel's... I mean, you know, I think Tuchel probably had better players at his disposal. But again, I think Manchester United have got a lot of good players, and it's about seeing the potential in players that the previous manager didn't see. I mean, remember that Chelsea, when Tuchel took over, went from being like a comedy defence. Like Lampard's Chelsea were hopeless defensively. You know what I mean? They were absolutely all over the place. They were the great Frank's entertainers, entertaining for every other club. You know what I mean? Because it's like these guys. And then they go from that to being a team that has conceded fewer goals. I saw a stat that the Chelsea in the first 50 games under Tuchel have conceded fewer goals than any team in the first 50 games under a new manager in the history of English football. Right? That's going back a long way.
Yeah.
So that's a phenomenal defensive record built on just the absolute, like, you know, the circus troupe stuff that was going on under Lampard. Now, is the other feature of Tuchel's Chelsea is they don't score that much, and certainly the last season they didn't score that much. They've been a bit better this season, but, you know, attacking has been an issue. You saw in the game yesterday that the two top scorers of Serie A started that game last season. That is, started this game on the bench. You know, Lukaku and Ronaldo both sitting there, like, what do we have to do to get a game? You know, okay, maybe Lukaku's coming back from. You know, he's recovering full fitness and so on, but things have been going pretty badly for him. I mean, people talk about the Bundesliga discount, you know, and how much you have to sort of, delete or from your expectation of a player's performance based on what they did in the Bundesliga. But like the Serie A, I don't know where the Serie A discount is now, but literally the two top scorers are sitting there at bench, which is pretty amazing. But this has been a problem for Chelsea so far. It's one that you imagine Tuchel will eventually be able to sort out. But the first thing that he did was sort the defence.
Yeah.
And I would suggest that's where Rangnick needs to start. And it's not really what Rangnick's teams have been known for, you know, in a sense they've been more these hard-running, attacking, chasing teams.
But that's one way of sorting your defence, though, isn't it? You know, if you sort your pressing and sort your attack through that way,
yeah,
then that has the knock-on effect of helping out your defenders considerably if the other team aren't getting free rein to just lob balls where they want at your back four or back five.
Yeah, Lampard had also just completely jettisoned like one of the best defenders in the world as well in Rudiger. He just didn't play him.
He was leaving Azpilicueta out of games as well, you know, and there was Jorginho, you know, UEFA midfielder of the year or whatever, was getting left out of games at the start of the year by Lampard. But I think
it's
there is that common factor of coming in and things can't really get any worse. You know, they were looking at the statistics on Sky, or they showed, you know, Rangnick's last season with Leipzig in 2018-19. You know, they were basically leading the league, leading the Bundesliga in all of the categories that United now are like, you know, 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th, you know, presses and, you know, attacking third, wins and goals conceded, you know, simple statistics like that. So there's lots of room for improvement, but I think the biggest room for improvement is defensively. The other thing, though, is like Ronaldo is not going to be a part of this, is he? Like, how can he be? Like, you know,
I don't know how he deals with that, though. That's the big question.
Well, you know, it is. That is the big question, because I mean, but it's a political problem. It's not a tactical problem. I mean, tactically, there is no discussion there. It's like, well, look, this guy was a great player once, but like, so was Roy Keane. That doesn't mean I'm going to ask him to come down. You know, like Keane's argument with Carragher is one of the most nonsensical things I've ever seen. Like, this was the argument that where the pitch kept going up, and it was everyone was, and Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank was sitting in the middle, beaming, and everyone was delighted. It was
the box office.
A world watched in delight as they went at it, and the best part of it was Keane going, "Did you win the FA Cup?" Which is just such classic Keane. It's got nothing to do with the argument, but he's just slid the stiletto between Carragher's ribs.
Carragher was saying, if you haven't bought him to win the league, then what's the point? Why have you brought him in? And Keane said, well, to win cups, to win trophies, like the FA Cup. You won the FA Cup, didn't you? Did you win the FA Cup? Did you feel great about that? Yeah, of course you did, because it's all you won. No Premier League title in your back pocket. I did think that was quite noteworthy.
I mean, but it's just such classic Keane, like just to come out with
lose
that. But
lose an argument on every metric, well, and also, yet still have the kind of like the most soundbiteable moment of it all.
His comparison with Ian Rush was a strange one to use as well. Was Ian Rush not actually quite a good worker up front?
Well, he was famous for this.
And also pressed quite hard as well.
Yeah. He's the first defender. You know, this was like one of his big selling points was, you know, how hard he chased, you know, and here's a player who scores a lot, but also runs relentlessly. And he, you know, so Keane was just hopeless. Keane was in the position of defending his own failed prediction that, you know, Ronaldo would be a great signing. And, he's not. It's been a disaster. You know, Ronaldo scored like...
Well, that's been a disaster. He scored a ton of goals.
Oh, and it's been a disaster. It's cost the manager his job.
Yeah, they'd probably be out of the Champions League without him.
I
don't think you can call it a disaster.
They'd probably be out of the Champions League without him. Why are we saying this? Why would they be out of the Champions League without him?
Because he scored a number of late goals to rescue them from dire situations.
But I contend that if they hadn't signed Ronaldo, they'd be in a much better place overall this season than the kind of hysterical disaster situation that they have found themselves dragged into.
Well, it's a hypothetical. Because we all know Solskjaer wasn't a brilliant manager. The wheels could have fallen off anyway, regardless of Ronaldo being there. I know they were okay last season, but again, this is where we are repeating an argument we had about 3 weeks ago. But just to throw it in there, to call it a disaster, I think.
It's been a disaster. It has been a disaster.
I disagree. Owen,
it was a massive mistake.
No, I know you're just winding me up now, but
it was a massive mistake, and I think we can all see when we look at the results. It's been a disaster. Keane also had the line, stats are taking over the world, he says with obvious frustration, although he will use them when he needs to. But like, there's only one stat that matters, Owen. And it actually isn't goals, as Keane suggested, but it is wins and losses. And where are they? Are they seven defeats since Ronaldo arrived? It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 wins since Ronaldo arrived, one of them being the 4-1 against Newcastle, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 defeats. That's a disaster.
I think a disaster would be if all those things
if all those things were happening and he wasn't delivering any goals, of course that would be a disaster. Or if it didn't look like he was sharp up front, but he does.
The way
I actually am now sounding like Roy Keane, which is not my intention.
He's just,
at the beginning
he's thrown in a few goals, like squid ink to billow and confuse people, is actually making it even worse.
But the point about it is, right, whatever way you classify what he's been up to now, that's over. It's what is he going to be under Rangnick? And I agree that if he is the least Ralph Rangnick player, yes, from everything we know about him, that could possibly be invented. Current, you know, 36, 37-year-old Ronaldo is just does not fit there now. Whatever about under Solskjaer, where you thought, well, I suppose Solskjaer doesn't really have a clue anyway, so maybe he is the right manager to just throw this random player at and see what happens, because that seems to be a large part of the approach. But with this highly sophisticated pressing, all that kind of stuff, it is now a really ridiculous situation that they've got themselves into.
Well, you know, here's the thing about Rangnick. Like, he's not a guy who's going to hang around if he feels as though things aren't, you know, if he's not having things his own way. He just won't do it. Like, I mean, it's not like Solskjaer, who, you know, it's not like Solskjaer has got, like, tons of options as to where he's going to work if he's not the manager of Man United. You know what I mean? Where's Rangnick? I don't think he... So I think he may actually just say, look, this isn't going to work. You know what I mean? You've got a guy who... It's just not. I mean, you saw the Chelsea game, right at the very end. Ronaldo really got away with one at the end because Rudiger knocked on over the bar from a simple position. Why did that chance arrive? Because Ronaldo didn't bother to try to close down the guy with the cross. Of course, he's not like he's Ronaldo. As Roy Keane said, he's above all that. But like, you can't really afford to carry a player like that at the top level, I don't feel. Look, we're repeating ourselves. We are repeating ourselves. And there's going to be more time to talk about this. And who knows, if they win the Champions League, I will end up looking really stupid. And at the end of the day, we know that's what this is all about, really.
He's a madman, letting off fireworks and people's runners and all sorts.
I just have a lot of good fun when I go to Bowls games.
It's not off the record stuff, it's on the record. He's a spacer.
Look at flares, look at flags. You can also like sneak your cans into the stand really easily.
Come on, come on, come on, come on, now touch me, babe.
We need to touch each other more.
Can't you see that I am not afraid?
Do you want for an 80 sign?
What was that promise that you made?
That's what going to a football match is about.
Why won't you tell me what she said?
Touching other people, you're hugging other people.
What was that promise that you made?
We need to touch each other more.
Now I'm gonna love you till the heavens stop the rain.
Do you want for an 80 sign?
After an FAI Cup final that captured the public imagination, we simply had to bring you the Snaid and Brano show today. David Snaid, how are you?
Good morning, very well, very well.
I'm sure you are. I mean, you are obviously an objective and fine journalist, but it's fair to say you would not be unhappy at the outcome of yesterday's Cup final.
No, I was very happy. Well, actually, it was actually a strange one, because obviously I actually had... Brano sent me a very nice message afterwards and stuff, but I did feel quite bad, obviously, for Bowes, genuinely, because obviously it was on penalties as well, and it was just a bit of a sickener, and it was a tight game. And I know, obviously, you're going to mention about the article I did with Keith Buckley and Chris Forrester, but yeah, kind of getting to doing that kind of actually did feel a little bit for Keith too. To be honest, I was most disappointed that I didn't get a chance to go to injure court afterwards. What our responsibilities stopped me, and I know that there was some nice celebrations, but it was a nice evening to be a St. Patrick's Athletic supporter.
I say so. Kevin Brannigan, journalist, filmmaker, and occasional Bowes ball boy. How are you?
How am I? I was in Daly Mount Park till quite late last night. So I've soaked in a lot of misery with a lot of other Bowes fans. I walked basically from Lansdowne, quite a good distance from Lansdowne, nearly to Daly Mount after the game. And there was something in it. It seemed as if the match had left a real, you know, imprint on the city. You know, when you're walking back from a big modern stadium after watching two League of Ireland teams play a football match, and you know, you're surrounded by crowds the whole way up to around Trinity College. It was just a football crowd that was streaming back into the city, and it was a mix of Bowes and Pats fans and young and old and all that. And then I hopped the Lewis up around Broadstone, only for one stop, didn't pay. And that was full of fans as well, heading back to Fisborough. So I was kind of like, okay, yeah, this is good. And you know, filling my head with all these kind of thoughts. But then it just kept coming back to, no, we've actually lost. We lost the cup final. It's really bad. And I was like trying throughout the night to be like, oh, you know, all this is a positive. That's, you know, record. And then that's, you're like, no, we lost the cup final. So, yeah, no, I feel desperate. I'm 33. You know, the last time we won the cup final, I was 19. And
you may never live to see Bohemians win another FA Cup.
Well, yeah, like I don't know, maybe Pats went like what 50 years or something like that. But you know, you can like pinpoint, you know, time and all this. So that's kind of the thing that I'm going through at the minute. It's just this whole whirlwind of like, what the hell?
I actually wish I had even some of those even felt emotions like that, because I was obviously in the press box and I was walking after, and it was like, I think it was nearly about 9:30 by the time I was leaving the Aviva, and I didn't get any kind of, obviously when you see the celebrations in the ground and stuff, and then getting messages from mates and they're kind of getting pictures sent through of where they are, and you do feel a fair bit removed from it and that. And then like by the time I was getting home, before I knew it, I was in bleeding Twitter spat with bleeding Dermot Connolly. So like I was just a totally bleeding different experience. I was just like at home sitting in my sitting room by myself, just like watching TV, and like it just felt so almost like not sterile, but I wish I even felt even more emotions like that. I wanted to kind of be like properly out and on a serious buzz, but it was just because of how I ended with the match and then even working, it was a bit weird. Like head was fried as well.
Yeah, well, I have to say, Dave, I went to the game yesterday as a fan, not working, and it's just like a million. It's like a million times better to go to a football match as a fan when you don't have to work. I mean, I can't say how much more I enjoyed it than a usual football match where I have to sit there afterwards thinking of things to say about it. Instead, I could just leave and, well, just say what came into my head naturally. But I am surprised that you, Kevin, saying that. I assumed that you would come on and say all the things that you said you tried to feel but couldn't quite feel. You know, so if you were back in Denimet with all these miserable Bohemians fans, that is interesting to me. Like, I know what the Pats fans were saying. I know what was happening in Inchicore, but, you know, every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. In what precise particular way was the Bohemians family unhappy last night?
Well, they were unhappy because they lost the cup final. Like, that's pretty wild.
Well, no. I know they lost it, but that's only the fact of it. They lost the cup final for reasons. What reasons?
Okay, well, you're asking my reason of why you think we lost the match. Like, I don't know. I had quite a good view of the game. I went to the game and I said I wanted to watch the game. I didn't want to get sucked into, you know, this screaming and shouting for the thing. I wanted to actually watch it. I thought it was, you know, pretty poor first half. I thought Pats had the whip hand on Bows throughout. I thought they were like, you know, holding us by the collar throughout it. But they mustn't have been doing that good if they only went and won us on penalties or beat us on penalties. So, you know, they mustn't have been that far ahead. But like in Dalymount last night, you know, people were still singing and dancing. I spent most of my time sat in the stand drinking pints outside. And yeah, there was a lot of like deep conversations happening around the place. Maybe because we all hadn't seen each other in 100 years or whatever, but it was a lot deeper and a bit more soul searching than I've been around in a long time. Yeah, people were just really, really upset. And then now in the cold light of day, it's like we finished fifth in the league and we lost the cup final, and, you know, we had a great summer in Europe, but the season's kind of a hard one to sum up now. You know, what's the review of it? What's the, you know, it's not good at the end of the day now, is it? You know, coming fifth in a 10-team league and losing the cup final, and, you know, a lot of players that made that starting 11 yesterday, you know, how many of them are going to be playing for Bows at the start of next season? So, yeah, like I'm in the pits of it right now, to be honest.
David, congratulations on your piece, by the way. Thought it was absolutely sensational, and we've already mentioned it. People should go and have a read of it if they haven't already. I was the same as you. I was kind of wanting both Forrester and Buckley, the two main characters in your story, to somehow both win the cup, which was obviously not going to happen. First of all, the piece itself, how much of this was staged? I mean, how convenient for you, David, that suddenly this mad referee pops up, all these characters, this Uncle Mick, the was a Buckley's dad just cycling by? Yeah, how are you, lads?
Yeah. Working, was he?
Yeah. No, genuinely, none of it was staged. Like, it took a couple of weeks, obviously, to arrange just with timings and that. But, yeah, like, literally, the only thing that was staged was meeting at the Hapley Bridge. And then after that, like, it was kind of at the window what the lads wanted to do, where we were going to go. Like, I didn't even know where we were going, really. Well, I had an idea in terms of the roughly the areas. But, none of it was actually pre-planned or whatever. So it was just, even the fact that I didn't rant, like, if I had it, pissed around, like, we probably just ended up with a sitting inside having a coffee somewhere, maybe, or something, I don't know. So, yeah, it was just blessed for how it turned out, really. Yeah, it was just mad reaction, couldn't get over it. It was deadly.
Poor old Buckley couldn't get over trying to catch Forrester for the goal. I mean, his lovely little, just the whole goal was incredible, but the little shimmy at the start.
The little touch from Forrester that kills Buckley.
First touch, yeah, just absolutely. Like, can you tell us a little bit about Forrester? Because he's one of these super talented guys. Every time I hear about him, there's always like a caveat. It's sort of like, yeah, we've got him going now. He's knuckled down. There's always this sort of thing in the background, super talented, but maybe hasn't always got the best out of it. But I mean, he really turned it on for that one.
That little touch, especially at that moment in the game as well. Like, just briefly to go back about why I think that point Brandon made was spot on about maybe Pat's having balls maybe by the collar a little bit, because they kind of had that little box midfield. It was interesting, they kind of had worked on it for the last, like, say 10 days or so, and they actually were told the team quite early in the week, so like the players all had a bit of time to actually know exactly what they were going to be doing and who was going to be playing. And I think that kind of like box midfield of, say, obviously Benson and Forrester a bit further up, and then Alfie Lewis, who I thought was tremendous, with Jamie Lennon at the base of it, that just meant that kind of Pat's were able to control a lot of the ball and stuff. But yeah, with Forrester, he's one of them where, like, he would have been playing, obviously, growing up, not playing proper, say, structured 11-a-side football until maybe the age of about 15 or 16. Like, he would have been playing as a banger in matches with his mates when he would have been a holder and stuff. And I think it was Belvo was the first kind of team he properly played for 11-a-side, actually, with Buckley, when he was about 16. And then obviously went to Bowles, came through at Bowles when Bowles went through their financial troubles and had to play a lot of young lads. See, Pat Fenlon gave them that chance, and then obviously went to Pats, won the league and the cup with Pats. Just, like, I'm guessing people who would be listening to this would obviously maybe have a grow for League of Ireland. They would have seen that goal he scored against Shamrock Rovers when he did the little scoop when one-on-one, and just absolutely.
He scored like two goals in sort of 2 weeks. He scored another unbelievable.
He scored a volley. There's a goal he scored away to Drogheda United. I think that would have been the same season, or it could have been the season after. It might have been the season, actually, I think, when Pats won the league in 2013.
Nearly from halfway line.
Yeah, and the ball's looping, which was unreal. Like, it's actually, I remember someone describing it, it was like a goal you might score on FIFA, but it was like, literally the ball's like looping out of the air, coming down, and he hits it on the volley, but at the lowest point, it's like right on the ground, and then just goes in. So nearly at the halfway line, just absolutely incredible. But like, he had all these, he would have been seen as, like, say, that flair player maybe who would want to play through the middle but would always be used out in the wing. Like, when Pat's won the league in 2014, he would have kind of predominantly have operated off, say, like the left hand side, because you'd have like the likes of, say, John Russell or Killian Brennan would have been a bit more central. But then, yeah, when he got his move obviously then to Peterborough after the cup final in 2014, and then he obviously started playing a bit deeper, and then he was kind of used as that six sitting in front of the back four and what have you, and was impressed in Peterborough. But then, like, he just, it was a mix of, I'd say, I think he does strike me as just someone who loves being at home and around family and stuff. Went through, obviously, mental health issues. Don't think, obviously, maybe he would have been given himself the proper, even though he was playing really well and doing really well over in England, as he kind of said himself, he was still struggling big time with, like, say, depression. But also, he wouldn't have been the other stuff off the pitch that would have been needed to maybe bring him on a bit further in terms of physically and what have you. And then obviously went to Aberdeen, didn't work out there for him, and then he's come back, and it took him a while. Like, his first season back in the League of Ireland, I'm pretty certain Harry Kenny was the manager at Pats, and that's when Pats were really struggling. Like, it was in a bit of no man's land. And he was not the Forrester people would have seen. I think people would have been, he is going through a serious kind of renaissance, I suppose, or rebirth, whatever, under O'Donnell. Because even lads talking after the game, it's a big issue now to see if O'Donnell even stays as manager. He's kind of like revitalised the club, and Forrester has been central to that. But then even throughout the season, like, it's not as if he's been the one who has been the constant standout. I know he's obviously nominated for PFOI Player of the Year and stuff, and he's had a really good season. But you can tell with the team, it's the unit that works, and that's why I think he's even impressing through it, is because the structures that are there around him allow him to even kind of shine a bit more. And he hasn't got all that maybe focus, or it's not all about him having to turn it on for Pats to win a game, you know. And then, yeah, I thought yesterday, I did think yesterday he was very good and get the ball away a bit, but like, I thought it was just him and Alfie Lewis and Robbie Benson was just tremendous, and obviously scored the winning goal. But I just think Pats maybe lacked that little bit of a cutting edge overall, maybe to win the game in normal time. Thought Eden obviously had done it in extra time, but it's just a mad way to end the weekend with the penalty shootout. And as I was saying earlier, I genuinely actually did feel a bit, because it is a sick one. Like, there's not, it's hard to describe. Like, I don't really have any mad animosity towards Bowles. So you don't want, like, I don't know. It's hard to describe kind of the feelings that I kind of.
Well, if you look at Keith Ward and the fact that Ward missed the penalty, and he also missed that big chance in Pauk in the dying seconds over there in Greece. Which, you know, when the more you look back at that chance, like, the ball comes at him fast and it's at a tight angle and it doesn't look as open goal as it was at the time. But just, like, yeah, seeing a guy like Ward do those two big things in one season, it's a killer.
And genuinely, do you know what it is as well? I was only just now, like, say with the Ireland team, you can feel a little bit attached to the players, even though you kind of speak to them and stuff and that. But, like, with a lot of League of Ireland lads, you get to know them so well because, like, and you do have so much access to them. But, like, also, like, there's no bullshit with most of them. They're sound, and you get to do, you kind of build up relationships with them all so long.
I was walking home again from Lansdowne after the Ireland Portugal game, and I prefer to walk home, so I was walking home again, and I live near Dalymount, and it was quite late on in the night, and I was carrying a Chinese at this stage, that's how late it was, and I got a beep and I turned around and this guy was like, Brano, hop in. And I was like, oh. It was James Talbot. And I actually had never spoken to James Talbot before. So he gave me a lift home then. He just said he couldn't sleep after the game or whatever. But it turned out he had given about 6 Bowes fans lifts home around the area that night.
Just picking people up and driving them home.
Just picking Bowes fans up and, like, driving them home. Like, this is like 1-2 in the morning, you know. And then I was walking through the road the other day and I got another shout, and it was a guy up the ladder, and it was Buckley painting some house, you know. So it's like, yeah, you're proper attached to these guys. And, you know, sometimes when your football team loses or whatever, like, you know, as I'm saying, like, at Ireland in the international stage or whatever, there's that feeling of disappointment because you want to just keep riding this wave of whatever tournament they're in or group stage or whatever. But yesterday it was like, it was my own disappointment, but also the disappointment for these players. And then it started, like, creeping into me, going, like, they're going to be in another team next year. You know, I'm going to start feeling animosity towards them. But this Bowes team has, like, maybe it's because it was through lockdown and, you know, getting invested with them even more, like, got you through that and you're able to think of them or whatever. But, like, proper attachment to them because they're all so young and they've all got such deep backstories and hard stories and all this sort of stuff that, like, yeah, it's a real bloody killer. And Dave even seems upset as a Pats fan on their behalf.
No, man, I'm upset that I wasn't in the Red Cow last night or in McDowell's. That's why I'm more upset, because, like, I feel as if I haven't been able to enjoy it properly. Like, some of my mates obviously got to, but that's why I'm more upset, to be honest. Well, I don't want to rub it in on you too much either.
Yeah. Well, I looked at a video of Brian Kerr celebrating a full time as well, so that kind of... That helped a little bit too. Like, you know, if Kerr is happy, I'm happy.
You mentioned, Kevin, a couple of times that the team might be breaking up now. I mean, you said in your piece, Dave, that this could be Keith Buckley's last game, which would be a kind of disappointing note, obviously, for him to finish on after playing so many games for Bohemians. But what do you think the story is going to be then, Kevin? I mean, how many of these players are in the same boat?
A lot of them. Cornwall, is he going to be there? Wilson, I didn't think should have started yesterday. Devoy, Buckley off to Australia, Tierney off to Motherwell, as we know, Burton Coote. Like, some of these players are still signed up, but you know, if someone comes in, they're gone. Kelly is, you know, 20 goals in the league this season. So the, a lot of options there for him. Apparently the Dundee manager was there looking at him yesterday and you're kind of like, oh, okay, great.
At Georgie Kelly?
At Georgie Kelly, yeah.
Well, he wasn't fit. Like, he shouldn't have played yesterday. He wasn't fit. Like, that's like...
Well, he was fit enough to start.
Yeah, I will, yeah, but like, you saw him, like, he wasn't, like... He just needed him there. He was there in body, but not in spirit. Yeah. But, like, but even you mentioned there about Toddy Wilson, like, he only played because Anto Breslin is going to Pats as well. Like, Breslin should have played left back and then he's going to Pats, so...
You think that was the reason for his selection issue because he's going to Pats next season?
I don't know. Like, I think, well, Breslin has been playing, hasn't he? Breslin's been fourth choice, so like it's like logical. Maybe that I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but like
But I think it does feel like an end of an era. And you're I'm also when I'm saying that I'm thinking like when did this era begin? So how is it the end? But it does seem like it's an end of this 11 group of players. And I say 11 because there's not a lot of strength and depth there. You know, there's two or three other players outside of the starting 11. So I'm just thinking of Keith Long going again next season. Like the first 8 games of this season were a disaster. Devoy, Tierney weren't even playing. Like it seems incredible that these like Irish under 21s and lads now are getting moves abroad weren't even really in the mix at the start of the season. And it took that long to get going. And it's just like, imagine being Keith Long this morning being like, right, I'm going to lose a big chunk of his players and I have to get going again. I have to motor again. And you look at next season and next season seems to be up and flying already. Like apparently Damien Duff's doing a gym session today with his players. But like Derry are going to take off. You know, Rovers are going to be Rovers. Pats are now a force. They might lose O'Donnell to Dundalk. And does that stabilise Dundalk and bring Dundalk back into the mix? So it just gets harder again next season for Bowes to get right back in the mix again, you know, so... I don't know.
But you mentioned it, sorry, but then Pats are in the same boat a little bit now, trying to keep hold of O'Donnell and quite telling how the players, like Lee Desmond spoke quite openly about how he, and so did Ian Birmingham, about how he's totally revitalised the club and changed things. And like some of the older players telling the younger lads coming through now, like you have to actually enjoy this while it's here because it hasn't always been like this at Pats, you know. And like, that's another thing now where like, some of the senior players at Pats probably waiting to see what O'Donnell does before they commit their futures too.
Yeah, but such a young league and such a young team, two teams yesterday, like 12 of the 22 were under 23, like, you know, which is great. But these players are gonna fly the nest from Bowes and fertilize other teams. And you just wonder where the production line is coming through after that.
David, I made the point earlier that Robbie Benson didn't exactly look like he was going to be the match-winning hero with about 5 minutes ago when he was sprawled on the turf getting his cramp. Not the only player to go down with cramp. And then he ends up scoring the winning penalty. I just thought there was such a big build-up to this one. There was your article, there's a lot of good stuff written. There seemed to be a lot of interest, a huge crowd. And then the match itself was drab enough, to be honest, for 90 minutes. But there's always that hope when it goes extra time that you can reboot and that finally everyone will be so absolutely exhausted that maybe spaces will start opening up. And it happened, in fairness, you know, really for the entirety of extra time. It was super exciting. And then for Benson to haul himself up off the turf and take a really nice penalty was some way to cap it off.
Yeah, no, it was like, I wasn't expecting him to maybe take one because I remember he missed one in, was it the League Cup or one of those cups, and he tried to do this the kind of the penalty that Ronan Coughlin did, the little kind of stuttering shimmy and rolling it in. And he's lost a couple of penalty shootouts with Dundalk too, in cup finals as well, and won in extra time. I think he was the one who actually was offering a fair bit of penetration in the 90 minutes, and then obviously Forrester was the one who got the goal. But like Benson's been such an important figure for Pats as well, coming in from obviously Dundalk. It was a bit of a surprise the fact that Pats were able to get him, because obviously he would have been one of the main men for Dundalk. He obviously would maybe struggle with injuries and would have had those issues, but he took his penalty really well. He's just like in that European run in 2016, obviously he scored like the famous goal as well against Paty Borisov, what you call it, in the Champions League qualifier, which basically confirmed the Europa League. But he's actually a genius, isn't he? I think he got like, he's like an he wasn't he got like the maximum amount of points you could get in the Leaving Cert, and then was like studying. What was he studying to be, like an actuary or something in UCD? I don't know. I don't have any head. But like, yeah, like he's a real kind of like smart fella, and he's just a great fella to watch. And like for Pats, if he's able to hang around and stay fit, and then you kind of see him and Forrester maybe linking a bit more, and if O'Donnell stays in charge and gets even more out of that partnership, because like Brandon's right, you mentioned that about how it is, there's so many young lads coming through, but you still need fellas who've been around and done it and can lead, not just by how they act around the place and the kind of the standards they set, but just how you can still deliver on the pitch and just manage stuff as well. Because there was like lads cramping, like both fellas cramping after about 60 minutes in the game, which I thought was quite strange. And then Benson had it in him to actually keep on going, and yeah, stuck that penalty away. It was a great penalty.
You're bang on. 600 points in his leaving cert, a master's degree in actuarial science, David. So good background there. Can I ask you just about the one dark spot on proceedings, and that was the events around Irish Town yesterday, on the violence. Has that put a bit of a dampener on things?
Well, yeah, because like it's disgusting, and it was very surprising as well. Because we could be totally wrong on this, but Pats and Bowls, like there's obviously an edge when the games are around, but very rarely would see much kind of aggro around those games. It's obviously more so Rovers. Like that's I genuinely wouldn't see it. Like, and even around the ground, like obviously I was getting the video sent through, like I got the dart in around, and there was like fans kind of at Connolly together, and there was no trouble. You got it, and hopefully the people who the culprits are found out, and obviously whatever has to happen punishment wise with the Gardaí and that, because it's just disgusting. And even the video you see, it's just obviously it's, you know what it is as well, what makes it even not that makes it worse, but maybe even sadder, is it's one group going to another group who actually have no interest in wanting to fight, like, you know what I mean? Like, you see one lad and he's only a young lad and he's kind of like totally shocked by what's happened, and he's putting his hands out to say, like, what the fuck's going on here, whatever, and he still gets a hiding, you know. And yeah, it's just there is no way around that. And even one of my mates was going in with his kids, and kind of they got caught up in it a little bit from across the road, and like they would have been quite upset about it as well. And you can't gloss over that. You shouldn't gloss over it. And it was one part of the day that will cast a bit of a shadow, but overall, like, you see in that stadium that was there, there was obviously other than the flares getting thrown out and all the rest of it, there was no trouble in the stadium or around. It was just that one bit of absolute kind of madness that hopefully I'm not just saying it because obviously League of Ireland person, but like, it is rare. You don't get it. You really don't. Like, it's not something that's a regular occurrence every at games, especially in between Pats and Bowls.
Shame to get it then, Brano, on such a big day though, right?
It's really bad. It's like a long hangover from the 80s or something like that, you know, like lads still trapped in the 20th century. But it doesn't do anyone any favours. Like, I remember a couple of years ago, Brian Kerr spoke out against the amount of riot fans and Gardaí in, like, you know, full battle uniform with dogs after a Bowes Pats game that was on a Monday night. And I remember Brian wrote a piece in one of the papers just being like, what is this about? This puts families off going to it, just seeing this, the flashing lights, the dogs, the riot shields and stuff like that. And now all the guards have to do is just to point to this and be like, that's why we have to be there like this, and, you know, you sort your house out before we like, you know, make the aesthetics a little bit more pleasing. I just hope the lads that were involved in that yesterday can, you know, find a new path in life and see that, like, you know, happiness isn't going to come from that. Like, you know, it was disappointing. Another disappointing aspect was that my mum rang me up and was kind of giving out to me, asking me, was I there?
my dad, that's actually hilarious. My dad messaged me as well. He brought me nephew into the match, and he was going absolutely mad at that as well. He obviously, luckily they weren't caught up in it, but yeah, my dad was similar as well. He was like, just couldn't get over it. He's from Broadstone. It's actually gas. Like, my dad would actually have maybe a bit more of a graph for Bowes than he would for Pats, even though growing up, you would have brought me to Richmond Park. It was quite weird. Like, it's quite strange with me.
But you can see where people are worried for you know, loved ones at the match when they see something that, yeah, I know is just, yeah, it was like, it seemed to be, you know, it's isolated enough, but it happened. And if you end up getting caught up in that, you know.
Yeah. Ah, really, listen, like, that's the thing. Don't get me wrong. Like, it is annoying, and you would hope that they're caught. And it's easy to dismiss this as, it's just a lot of young fellas who like to stitch on stone line and badges onto their, like, jumpers from pennies or whatever. But like, it did seem to be like, proper grown men who are getting involved in this. And like the fact that there was 37th record attendance for the final at the Aviva, I could put a picture up, like the occasion, the atmosphere in the ground was absolutely brilliant. It was amazing. But then, of course, like people who are on the fence with going to League of Ireland or even what it's about, if there's a trade off between saying, well, they might get caught up in something like that, well, then you can see where it might be apprehension. But I would hope, and I would think that people would realise as well that it is such a minority thing, and that it's not kind of indicative of what going to the League of Ireland is about. It really isn't. And but again, you can't gloss over it.
Yeah. All right. Listen, great stuff, guys. Thanks, David. Maybe you can celebrate a little bit today, there, David. And Brano, I don't know what my advice is to you. Just keep trucking on. Get a couple of coffees in.
Yeah, I'm gonna go for another coffee.
Yeah, that's the plan.
So I'll start from there.
Brano, David Snaid, brilliant. Thanks a million.
No worries, take care.
Thanks.
It happened to me on the dart.
It's time to get busy, this motherfucker.
Like we always do about this time.
Okay, I'm going to reveal a piece of information now. Well, I haven't smoked a cigarette in 4 days.
So what I'm saying is to this guy, cheer up. How about you wake up?
Last time I took the dart, I was offered a spliff.
Wake up. Wake up to what's happening in the world.
Hey, Pat, do you want a spliff? You know?
Gotta say, Ken, before we wrap things up, great to have you back. Hamlet, The Beatles, Cinnamon. This has been, there was a bit of football there at one point today as well, which is great. Always good to talk about football on the football podcast.
Do you want one more cup final day memory on?
Go on then.
Around 12 o'clock last night, I look out me front window and there's a Pats fan asleep outside my house.
How did you know it was a Pats fan? Was
he was wearing a Pats hat and he had a Pats scarf around his neck. I think it's fair enough to assume, you know, he was indeed a Pats fan.
It was pretty cold last night.
It was very cold. And like, I mean, if it was, you know, the middle of June, I'd be like, listen, sleep it off and do what has to be done. But I did. I went out there, you know, and I shook him and I said, young man. And he turned, he kind of shook his head, you know, and he looked up at me and he goes, mister, but we won the cup today. I said, get out of here, you little scab. Get out of here.
This sounds like a David Snaid article, a David Snaid pre-cup final piece.
Suffice to say, he did not say, mister, but we won the cup
Father,
today.
He said, Father, but, Critty is a Jew. No. Is it yourself?
Did he say anything?
There was a Pats fan asleep outside my house, and I did move him on, but the exact exchange did not go exactly like that. What can I say?
Okay. I'm glad you listen.
Owen, it was a night of great celebration here in the Kilmainham-Inchicore area. We're delighted. It's been a roller coaster. It's been a beautiful, beautiful few days. It was actually amazing to walk through Inchicore over the last 4 or 5 days and see a ton of bunting. Like, it's just a little reminder, I think, that the GAA does not have the patent on this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm sure it was the same in Phibsborough as well with Bowes. It's like a community is a community and they get behind successful sports teams, and it's not a thing that only ever happens in the GAA. It was a really eye-opener, actually, over the last 4 or 5 days. So I was a very happy man yesterday, even though, of course, you know, I haven't attended enough St. Patrick's Athletic games. The whole idea of yesterday as an occasion, though, I think, Owen, is to get fuckers like me in the door more often. And I think that's what will happen in the 2022 season.
Excellent. You did say that the first time you attended a league game there, having moved to Inchicore. But we'll see if you follow through this time. Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Kevin.
There was no cup presented in front of 37,000 people the last time, though.
That is true.
There was less than half that number that's still there, I think, because a lot of the Bows faithful. I was outside the ground with them already by the time that happened. It's a funny thing being in the end when a penalty shootout is lost and won by the other team, and you're in the end that lost.
Mm.
It's quite a funny sound. I mean, obviously it wasn't funny. I wasn't laughing at the Bows fans, but just the combination of the silence that just it's a silence that you can hear, and then suddenly from the far end, you see the other side, the other half of the stadium just pops up. A wonderful moment of treasure. Obviously, with commiserations for the losing Bohemians team, who'd given us all such a wonderful evening's entertainment.
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Owen. And you, Kieran.
Of the Premier League on the World Service during the week, and the Players' Chair interview with Keith Earls coming up tomorrow, sports book slot, and US Murph. I didn't even mention him earlier. I think we've got US Murph. That's the plan anyway. So we will talk to you members tomorrow. Take care. Bye bye.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, they never go home, they never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.